Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Something from Mother's entitled I Spoke to God. I spoke to God last night. As I communed with Him in the silence of my soul, my whole being was filled with bliss. I saw Him everywhere, in every atom of space, and in every form that walks the earth. And my heart poured forth these words in a song of love to Him, the Infinite Beloved. You are the Spirit within me. You are the essence of life dwelling in the cavern of my heart. You are the force primeval, the power which makes me move and breathe and have my being. You are the light of the world. You are the wisdom stemming from the deep recesses of my consciousness. You are the ocean of love whose waves lapped on the shore of creation, brought there by the ecstasy of the union between spirit and nature. You are the bliss which lifts me on high. You are the music of the spheres playing the grand symphony of your universal song of Om. You are the individual notes of the haunting melody of love which you sing within me in perfect harmony to enchant my enraptured soul. You are the beauty of form and of color, of all that springs from the earth and is seen in the sky. You are the summit of the mountain and the lowest point of the valley and the white cloud floating overhead. You are the twinkling star, the soft glow of the moon, and the blazing fire of midday sun hung in the wall-less chamber of space, evidence of the radiant splendor of thy wondrous presence. You are the fragrance of the rose and the song of the nightingale. You are the warm summer breeze and the loud roaring storm of winter. You are the moisture which falls as the raindrops to water the thirsty soil. You are the soft, white, lacy snowflakes which blanket the ground as all nature sleeps. You are the joy of happiness and of laughter. You are the tears of compassion which expand the heart. You are the peace which passeth all understanding. You are the Alpha and the Omega, and yet you are beginningless and endless. You are man, you are woman, you are God. You are the ever-conscious, eternally living reality, expressing yourself as the One and the Many. You are the great I Am, the Almighty, I Am That. Om Tat Sat. From something that I wrote on Friday, entitled Om Mother. Om Mother, Divine Mother of one and all, you have given us life and soul, and given all we may call our own. Om Mother, you have manifested as each one's mother. Sometimes you are love manifest, and sometimes destroyer of dreams. Behind all manifestations, I see you in loving form. For all disguise you wear works for good, one and all. O sweet mother, I honor and lay my love upon your shining feet of gold, leaving in surrender my good and all. O mother, you manifest as all mothers. Make me know it is you shining in all, and shine your sunlit love upon me now. O sweet mother, I feel you close now. Your hand touches my outstretched hand. We are forever, forever one. Today is, of course, Mother's Day, and it's a wonderful day of celebration. Without a mother, none of us would be here. It is by going into the jaws of death, so to speak, that each woman brings forth an issue of new life, and we were that new life at one point. It's been very interesting as I've been reading some of Yogananda's writings. One of the things that he said that came as new information to me was that at the point of conception, when the spermatozoa and the ovum come together and form one cell, there is an emission of astral light that goes out at that point. And souls clamor to get into that soul, or into that body, to have an opportunity to incarnate in this material form. It's really quite something to think that it's difficult to be able to gain a material manifestation. But we are told it is a great privilege and a blessing in order to gain this material birth. Someone asked me over the weekend why it is that some babies do not come to full term. And Mother explained this, saying that in many cases, it is that that soul took their life early. And as a result of that, they have to go through several short lifetimes in order to pay off the karma for taking their life early. And at that point, when they have paid off that karma, then they are able to come to full term and to come into this life and have a full lifetime. There are others who have a short life after birth. And some are of very pure nature. I was reading from Ramana Maharshi at one point, and he said that this is due to that there is just a little bit of karma for that one to pay off. And actually, they are very highly realized souls, and sometimes these pure souls come in and they just have a little bit to do. And when their work is done, then they leave this material form. You know, it is only our attachment to this body and our lack of recognition of what the true nature of life is that makes us so sorrowful at the moment of departure of a soul from their physical encasement. Now, we can grieve the fact that this one has left our presence, that they have gone on, and that we will not have the same kind of opportunity to be with them in a physical form as what we had during their lifetime. But to become too preoccupied with the passing of one is not to pay true homage to the life that that one was and continues to be. Mother's own passing has proven to me beyond any shadow of a doubt that life continues beyond this physical form, that her presence continues to come to me, that I feel her closely, and I know that there are many here who do also. That intelligence continues to inform me and guide me along my own way and in the helping of others, and that many pray to Mother, many put their attention upon her, and she comes to them as a loving presence, as a consciousness, as a realized being who comes in to meet the real needs of aspirants as they go from the human to the divine. It's really tremendous. Once, when I was at a certain restaurant with Larry, we were talking about Mother, and just the feeling of her presence was so close. And I felt, for some reason, that she was as if she were sitting in the chair next to me. And I just reached out my hand, and it was as real as any physical sensation that I can ever explain, more real, in fact, that her hand reached back out and put her hand into my own. And I just felt such a great presence, such a great and loving consciousness. And who can say what is physical and what is mental and what is energetic when all of these come together in one confluence and manifest itself as some living presence. And this is the way that it was for me at that moment. And in that moment, Mother was as real, as close, as intimate as she ever had been in the physical, material plane. And this is true for anyone who has gone beyond. We don't need to make a practice of it, but if we put our mind upon that individual, we can send messages to them, we can send them our thoughts, and we can also receive their thoughts. These thoughts that come to us are clearly different from our own. And while we're told to seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, so we don't put all of our effort into this kind of thing. But it is possible to do. And through that, we can enact forgiveness. We can send love. We can rectify to the best of our ability past wrongs, perhaps, that we have done to that one. And even though they have left this physical form, nevertheless, we are able to reach out to them and manifest that change. So it's a tremendously hopeful, living presence that surrounds us all. I remember going to my grandmother's funeral, and part of the fun of it, as Ram would have it, was that the minister who officiated never knew my grandmother, as she never visited the inside corridors of a church. So he went on to say that he didn't know her, he knew a little bit about the early history of that area, and they had been pioneers of that area. Previously, he'd been an economics professor, and apparently not a very good one, because he went on to give us a lecture about economics of the area. It was so boring that I thought to my, and I felt my grandmother's presence so close, and we both started laughing, and I said, this man can turn grief into boredom faster than anybody else I know. So it's fun. It's fun. And these living consciousness, these living entities, they don't change their personality just because they made a transition from one place to the other. You know, oftentimes we think, well, if I die, then everything will be perfect. Well, why? Why? Have you earned it? Have you made that a reality in your life today? This is your life. This is the place where you find yourself. And it is here that you find that inner perfection. Not because as a human individual you attain some element of that perfection, because there's always something for us to work on. There's always something for us to improve upon. Because when we take a human incarnation, we take on this veil of ignorance. Now realize masters, once they realize their oneness with God, they voluntarily take on an ego. And therefore, they take on some limitation. They take on some form of ignorance in order to manifest themselves upon this world. But in our human self, we don't become perfect in that way. But our perfection resides in the spiritual sense. Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world." But it is, the kingdom of heaven is one of spirit. And so it is in a spiritual sense that we become perfect. We attain a union with that spiritual consciousness to the point where even our seeming ignorance is actually a manifestation of that universal intelligence. Now that's a difficult thing to understand on a human level, but it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And so a realized master comes and they may say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Because they have assumed that level of ignorance. But Jesus says, be ye perfect, even as my Father in heaven is perfect. So what does he mean by that? If his kingdom is not of this world, but of a spiritual kingdom, then it is through attaining this perfection within your spiritual self. And that perfection is due to your oneness with the spiritual consciousness. And as it manifests itself through you in every thought, word, and deed, that is perfection. Even if it has some seeming ignorance attached to it. So you might ask, and well ask, how can you then tell someone who is fully realized from somebody who is in ignorance? Well, Papa Ramdas actually said it's difficult, even for a fully realized master, to tell another fully realized master. That's quite a statement. And yet there are telltale signs. In the presence of that one, you feel changed, you feel uplifted, you feel transformed in some way. I can say, in truth, that there was never a time that I came into Mother's presence that I was not changed in my consciousness. Now, sometimes it was difficult and it was challenging in the way that I was changed. But nevertheless, it is a fact that I felt that upliftment, I felt that change. And sometimes it was coming together in very ordinary ways. It wasn't an overtly spiritual time, so to speak. The conversation may have revolved around work or around things of our ordinary lives and so on. But it made no difference because that spiritual consciousness that she manifested went to work on me. And I felt the atoms of my being change. And this is true every time I came into her presence. Now, for someone who is not spiritually attuned to her, or someone who was not called by her, they may just see a very pleasant or a very nice individual that they enjoy being around, but they don't experience the same kind of transformation. It may go on a conscious or an unconscious level, but for such a great spiritual being such as herself, even the unconscious levels of change were profound. And sometimes they saw themselves change in their behavior and the way that they were in the world. And even though they didn't follow this path, nevertheless, they felt the influence, as I say, in either a conscious or an unconscious way. So I feel as if in my life I've had two mothers, one material and one spiritual, even as I've had two births. One material and one spiritual. And Mother, of course, is my spiritual. Now I have great love and great gratitude for my material mother, so to speak, my biological mother. And she gave everything of herself through my developing years so that I might grow into someone who she would like to know. You know? Rather than a little demon, although I could be that sometimes too. But this was her life, was to give that. And really, it is the greatest thing in this world to be able to give our children the proper love, the proper training, the proper understanding in order to help them manifest their full potential as human souls. Now, the greatest learning they get from us is our example. And this is true for all of us. Whenever we're in the vicinity of children, much less other adults, our example speaks far more volumes than our words do. and who we are and what we manifest counts. Children are excellent observers, and all we have to do is stay around children very long before we see them mimicking the adults in their life. And so they take on these early patterns, and this goes into the formation of their personalities. So it is very important. It calls upon us, and in this way we grow spiritually, because it calls upon us to manifest that perfection within us and allow it to manifest itself through us. Now, that greatest perfection is God's perfection that resides right within you. And it's not so hard. It's not so distant. It is true that the real work is in our day-to-day living of it. It is to tuning your mind to that highest vibration on a constant basis and allowing that to move through you, speak through you, to do through you. And the more you're able to attune yourself to this inner consciousness in this way, the higher and the greater your realization grows. The more you turn your mind away from it, and you are ruled by the senses and by this little ego, the further you grow away from it. So Jesus was to say, not all those who say, Lord, Lord, are my disciples. But it is they who do the works, they who live the life, they who make manifest these teachings, they are the ones who are my disciples. So there may be many who say, Lord, Lord, but are not my disciples in truth. And this is true for all of us. We are all called upon to be holy, to be attuned with God's inner spirit. And unless we dedicate ourselves to that proposition 100%, we will not and we cannot make that manifest. Now, there's a strange thing about that. On the one hand, we have to dedicate ourselves 100%. And yet it is not through our own self-will that this consciousness can be manifested. It is a thing of realization. It's confusing to many people. Do you have to strive to know God, or does God do everything for you? We are told we have to strive for God. We have to bend every effort, every will, every thought towards realizing this great consciousness. But then saints like Papa and others say it is all God's grace. So how do these two fit together? When you bend every effort towards realizing and making manifest the spiritual consciousness, you could do this from now until the end of all creation and not affect this perfection, this spiritual perfection. But when this grace is allowed to come in because your own will accedes to it, then you activate this spiritual grace. Now, grace always is manifesting itself and trying to express itself through us. But God has given us free will. And so if we do not make it clear, not only in our conscious mind, but our subconscious mind, that we wish to manifest this spiritual consciousness, then we will never do it, because we have spent this lifetime and many lifetimes before giving the opposite instructions. I want. I will. And it's in complete opposition to divine consciousness and divine will. And because we have been given that free will, we have programmed ourselves to be free agents, separate and distinct from spiritual consciousness. In order to make manifest the spiritual consciousness, we have to give such clear, such concrete instructions, not only to this conscious mind, but our subconscious mind as well, that it begins to open up a channel and a passage for the superconscious mind to manifest itself through us. Do you see how that works? That's a very important point. Because we can try to make an effort for a moment or even for a part of a day and try to turn ourselves over to that spiritual consciousness. But very quickly, like a deep rut in a road, our tires slip right back down into that rut once again. And there we are. We're stuck in the rut. We have to make tremendous effort and turn those steering wheels hard to get up out of that rut. Now, if you do this enough time traveling down this road, eventually the rut begins to disappear as the tires wear down these deep holes, and we get the freedom to be able to steer ourselves anywhere we want to. But in the beginning, it's a real effort of will. Not because of what's been done to us, but because what we have of ourselves created. So it is sending out that message. How do you do this? By keeping your mind on God always. And by sending out that message, you draw to yourself God experience. Not because grace has not always been shining on you, but because we have blocked it. We have said no, essentially. I don't want that. I'll do it myself. You know, we're like that two-year-old who's, you know, you want to help them as a parent, and they say, no, I'll do it. And they push you away because they want to do it. Well, that's good for the development of the self. But when it comes to the development of the spiritual self, it is a total and complete surrender to that inner consciousness. And when we get to a certain point of having given those instructions for grace to come in, then grace begins to actively manifest itself in and through us. And we feel it as that presence. It can be peace, it can be joy, it can be an inner direction that guides us to this place and that place. And if we attune our mind to it, it gets very, very specific in what to do and what not to do. When we say certain words, we know that it was not in harmony with that highest consciousness. And so in this way, we begin to learn what vibrationally is attuned to that highest consciousness, and in what ways we step out of that. But as we attune our mind to that, we begin to feel that this presence is activating this body. It's giving it the power to move. It is giving it the power to speak and to think. And you are consciously aware that it is this divine consciousness that is manifesting itself through you. And at that point, you can say in truth, I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. Equally, Jesus said, I do not judge, but if I judge, my judgment be true. Now, how can these two things be true? It seems like he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. He is saying, as a human individualized consciousness, I do not judge, but if I judge, and that is not the little I, but that is the supreme consciousness within you, if that part judges, then that judgment be true. And this is the way that it is as we grow in this realization. We feel ourselves to be nothing. We perceive ourselves as not having judgment. We don't have desire. But judgment may come through us, and when it does, that judgment is true. And we know that it is, because it carries that vibration of truth. And so this is the second birth. This is the birth into our great spiritual being. And we are all here because one individual woman, picked up her life and made the difference in her own life. Now you can say, well, that was Mother. She was extraordinary. She was different. But why? Why would you say that? Just to distance yourself? To take yourself off the responsibility hook? There is no difference. Every one of us wake up in the morning and we decide how we are going to spend that day. When you wake up in the morning, think of your whole day as a complete blank slate. you can create with it as you will. Now, you can be ruled by your passions. You can be ruled by your habits. You can be ruled by what's happened in the past. Or you can say, I am God's child, born with free will, and the capacity to choose as God sees fit within me to choose. And when you do this and you make that manifest in your life, you become a free agent. And this makes all the difference in the world. All the difference. And this is all speaking towards your second birth. And this is the greatest birth. It's one thing to go into this life and to get that birth when that astral light emits out, as Master talked about. The other thing that Master said about that developing one and within the womb is that the consciousness comes and it connects itself with that body. And that body, as it develops, begins to reflect the consciousness of that one who is going to inhabit it. So it's a very interesting interchange that goes on. One is that it is the pattern of the parents, both genetically and socially, psychologically, emotionally, that draws that child to that one. But also, as the child comes in, its pattern begins to get imprinted on that developing body. Isn't that a fascinating thing? And when you think about it, mothers go through variations. They get appetites that are different than their normal appetites during pregnancy. They have preferences that are different than their normal preferences. And this is the consciousness of that soul as it begins to make itself manifest within that body. Because while that body is genetically different from the mother's, yet it is contained within the mother's. And so is that soul, and that soul is consciousness. So what the mother does matters. What they say, what they think, how they act, what they eat, all of it, it all makes a difference. And it begins the training of that young soul even at that point, and attunes that soul either to a higher vibration or a lower one. And so through each action we have a great responsibility, and mothers carry that more than anyone else. It is also a great privilege, because it is a rare thing for that soul to get that opportunity. And it is a rare thing to find a spiritually charged consciousness of a mother and a family situation to bring that soul into. So it is a great privilege for the mother and for the father and for that family who welcomes in that one. And it is a wonderful event for that soul to be able to come in that way. As we move along in time here, we're charging headlong into the Dwapara Yuga. These souls that are coming along these days are tremendous. And there is a new light coming into this world. Now, to this point in our society, it has been an immature kind of a thing. It's been a reaching out for something new. Through the last several decades, there's been a reaching out for something that is different. They know they're not satisfied with what they've been given, but they can't quite put their finger on what it is that they want. And that is because these inner truths have not yet become manifest. But they are looking for it. They're searching for it. And when you look at the present younger generations, there is a great emptiness. There's a great wonderful reservoir of goodwill that's there, despite what we read about in the newspapers, and despite certain activities of certain ones. Nevertheless, whenever you meet these young ones, you see a great light. You see something manifest, but it's also lacking guidance. It's also lacking a goal, reaching out for something greater and higher. They're not being taught that. They're being taught, rather, that this world revolves around the lowest common denominator. that we need to look at the very worst in human behavior and concentrate on our minds on that. And it's not good. It's not good. But when we turn this around and we point ourselves and therefore our children in the right direction, that life is meant for something more than just fulfilling the senses. And that's why it feels empty to many. They get more and more of the outward stimulation, but less and less of the inner satisfaction. And so there's a great hunger and a great need. And as this knowledge comes forward, that life is meant for more than just the senses, but spiritual realization, then these souls will become on fire because the emptiness has been great and the need has been great. And so it is up to each one of us to make manifest that truth, to bring that to our children. And mothers are really the cradle in which all of society is born and which it is nurtured, and which it is brought up. And so, my feeling of great gratitude, not only for my own physical mother, not only for my own spiritual mother, but a great sense of gratitude for all those who have taken on the mother, raising children, and those who have been mentors and guiding lights to children. That mothering spirit, whether it's in a male or a female, reaches out and gives love and understanding and direction. And so it is a tremendous thing to see. And it should be uplifted, it should be edified, it should be brought into the light of how deeply important it is to us as individuals as well as to the society as well. And with that recognition comes love and gratitude for all that the mothers of all this world sacrifice. India is really quite wonderful, you know. In India, I think you see a kind of simplicity that oftentimes is lacking here. What they lack in terms of economic development and having technology and that kind of thing, you see the relationship between the parents and the children. And there is a dedication of the parents to the children. And the children recognize that, and because of that, there is a commensurate respect that goes back to the parents. Now, I hate to see some of the changes that are going on because some of this Western influence is coming in. It sows a seed of division between the child and its parents. And it seems to be epidemic within our Western civilization. There seems to be this need to be contentious. But it is not just human nature. You don't see that as a universal truth throughout all the world. You see many countries and many cultures in which there is an ongoing respect. And you don't see that rebelliousness come into being nearly as much. There is still some of that, but not in the same way. And so I think it's not inevitable that that has to happen. But we glorify in that. We hold it out as the highest ideal, really, rather than seeing the children continuing to be influenced and taught and loved by the parents, and seeing that happen through their entire lives. So I would love to see that come into being within our society, where it's not seen as normal or rational that children have to rebel against their parents and have to go against their parents' will in order to establish themselves. It's a very poor substitute for real establishment of the self. Really, you're not becoming a self. You're just becoming rebellious against something else. And so that something else is still defining you. You know, it's well, if my parents like it, then I know for sure I'm not going to like it. That's not freedom. That's not independence. That's dependence in its oppositional mode. So it has no truth to it. It has no reality other than a mythology that we've come up with. And so that would be a tremendous change to see this respect come back in, this mutual love and absolute dedication to one to the other. And we would see such a change in this youth and such an easing of the transitions that they go through. But we can be and do our part in making these changes. And so this idea of motherhood is the most tremendous thing. You know, when I was at the ashram, I'd never felt a connection or a closeness to Mataji. At the ashram, there's Papa and there's Mataji. And it's really a wonderful atmosphere because there is this balance between the male and the female that's so openly manifest there. And so at Mataji's Mandir one morning, as we were making our rounds, I made a prayer to Mataji. I said, show me who you are. Show me your real nature. As I made the rounds around this Mandir, it suddenly became obvious to me that she was Mother Nature, all of Mother Nature, that is aspiring and focused on the Divine Father, Spirit unmanifest, as the Father represents in spiritual consciousness. Mother is Spirit manifest as all creation, as all nature. And that Spirit Father is unmanifest in its undivided form. And that this great aspiration, this great welling up, this bhakti spirit that comes into us, is the Divine Mother. It is the feminine aspect rising up through the spine and up through the soul and lifting it up to the highest realms of consciousness, into the realm of Spirit Absolute, or the Divine Father. And so this nature was revealed to me, and it was a wonderful thing. And soon afterwards, Papa revealed to me the source of the Divine Father, and its Spirit Absolute, the universal vision. And so one was the aspiration for spiritual consciousness, and the other was the fulfillment of it. And together they worked together hand in hand. It was a beautiful. And so the universal Divine Mother represents that. She's not only the beauty and the wonder and the intelligence of all this creation that's magnificent, but also is this great upward yearning and desire for spiritual union and consciousness. So it's a tremendous inner truth that comes to us when we go inside and we look through the origins of the Divine Mother. Today we're going to have the children. I think you all know we've started Sunday school recently, and they've been learning a chant, and they're going to come up and sing the chant and lead us in that. And I think it's wonderful. We have some tremendous souls. And we're not a large number of people, but really numbers of people have very little meaning. It is the quality of spirit. It is the quality of the individuals. I would rather us be a small group with high quality of spirit, spiritual vibration, than large numbers that's all diluted. Of course, as Master said, better than crowds is one good soul, and better than one good soul is a crowd of good souls. So God takes care of all of that, but we have some tremendous souls in these little children. And you hear some of the things that they say, the questions that they ask, and you realize that these are wonderful little beings. And so I'm just so pleased to have started up the Sunday school. And to start them in beginning to get these concepts. And the greatest one is that God is within you. And so they've been learning about this over the last couple of weeks. Come on in, children. come up here and... I was just telling everybody that you were going to lead us in a chant.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Bliss.